Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. And with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. On October 19th, 2014, the LDS Church posted on its official website, LDS.org, a short 4-minute and 15-second video talking about what Mormons call the temple garments. In this short little description, it does something that I found was quite interesting, and I think it goes along with a primary claim that the Mormons have often made ever since its inception, and that being that what Mormons believe and practice is what the early church believed and practiced. In other words, when the Mormon refers to its gospel as the restored gospel, what they are saying is what they believe as far as the gospel is concerned is what was believed in ancient times and eventually lost, needing to be recovered. So the Mormons will often try to give us the impression that what they are doing, what they believe, what they practice, is what early Christians believed and practiced. This video does the same thing. In the video, it talks about these religious vestments, and maybe we should read that actual paragraph where it talks about these religious vestments and compares them to what we read concerning garments in the Old Testament.
It said, "Not all such religious vestments are on public display. Some are seen only in places of worship. Temple robes of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, known as the robes of the Holy Priesthood, are worn only inside Mormon temples and reserved for the highest sacraments of the faith. White symbolizes purity. There is no insignia or rank. The most senior apostle and the newest member are indistinguishable when dressed in the same way. Men and women wear similar clothing. The simple vestments combine religious symbolism with echoes of antiquity reflected in ancient writings from the Book of Exodus."
Now, when it says that, when it talks about the Book of Exodus, you can see the camera zooms in on a verse out of Exodus chapter 28. It really zooms in on verse 4. But what does Exodus 28 really say about these vestments or these garments?
Well, it's talking about the priestly garments. In fact, starting in verse 2 of chapter 28, it says, "Make sacred garments for your brother Aaron to give him dignity and honor. Tell all the skilled workers to whom I have given wisdom in such matters that they are to make garments for Aaron for his consecration, so he may serve me as priest. These are the garments they are to make: a breastpiece, an ephod, a robe, a woven tunic, a turban, and a sash. They are to make these sacred garments for your brother Aaron and his sons, so they may serve me as priests." And it talks about the particular things such as the ephod and the breastpiece and the other implements that were used by Aaron and the Levites to be able to serve in the tabernacle.
Well, specifically, as you just read, Aaron as his sons. And of course, that's one of the beefs we have with Mormonism, because they claim to have the restored Aaronic priesthood. Yet in order to have the Aaronic priesthood, you had to be of the tribe of Aaron. If you did not come from the tribe of Aaron, you were not authorized to have the Aaronic priesthood. I had a couple missionaries at my house just the other day, and they were telling me how Jesus bestowed the priesthood upon his disciples. And they looked a little shocked when I said, well, it certainly couldn't have been the Aaronic priesthood, because Jesus wasn't authorized to have the Aaronic priesthood, being from the tribe of Judah. He wasn't from that tribe. He could not have the Aaronic priesthood, and he certainly could not have bestowed the Aaronic priesthood. But the Mormons try to make it sound that their belief system echoes what is in the Old Testament as well as in the New. And we don't really see that. They fudge in a lot of areas. And when they talk about these vestments combine religious symbolism with echoes of antiquity reflected in ancient writings from the Book of Exodus, and then take us to Exodus 28:4 with the camera, we need to then ask, is, wait a minute, is this really what the Mormons are doing? Because as you read there, Are Mormons really wearing an ephod? And what are the other things that are on that list? Are they doing any of that?
Well, you have the breast piece as well, and the ephod made of gold. And I mean, these are things that are not part of anything having to do with Mormonism. However, at the end, there are other priestly garments, and they actually talk about undergarments. So let me read you the very end of this chapter, 28. It says, make linen undergarments as a covering for the body, reaching from the waist to the thigh. Aaron and his sons must wear them whenever they enter the tent of meeting or approach the altar to minister in the holy place, so that they will not incur guilt and die. This is to be a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants.
But they couldn't even be the same as what Mormons wear, because it says from the waist to the thigh. The temple garments that Mormons wear covers the upper part of the body as well. In fact, they've gone through several revisions in how they look over the years, and we're planning on talking about that. But is this really what Mormons are doing?
Well, no, because in verse 43, it says that they're supposed to wear these when they entered the tent of meeting or approached the altar. Mormons are instructed to wear their garments at all times. We'll get into that further as well. But the very last sentence of that, this is to be a lasting ordinance for Aaron and his descendants. Mormons who go to the temple are not belonging to Aaron and his descendants. They're not Levites. Typically, they'll say they belong to the tribe of Ephraim, but very rarely will you find anybody who actually claims to be from the tribe of Levi in a spiritual manner, that when they get their patriarchal blessing, they're told which tribe they come from. Well, none of them are coming from Levi.
I would think that if the Mormons just wanted to be outright honest about this and just say, look, what we believe regarding our special garments are unique to us, I think probably most people would say, okay, go ahead, no big deal. Because I don't think most people really give a lot of attention to the particular garments that different religious people wear. The reason why the Mormons, I think, have been criticized so much about their garments is, one, because of the secrecy that has surrounded them for all these many years until October of 2014, when all of a sudden, now the church is going to be transparent about this. It never has been in the past. In fact, if you ever brought up the subject of the garments to an LDS acquaintance, they would probably get very offended that you would even mention it to them. Well, now the door's wide open, folks. It sounds like if the Mormon church wants to put a video on their website about it, then they've opened the door for discussion. And that's what we're doing. We're discussing this. When they zoom in on Exodus chapter 28, verse 4, and they try to make it sound like there's some kind of similarity between the Old Testament garments and what Mormons are wearing today, then that invites us to scrutinize the claim that they are making. The fact remains, there is no comparison between the two. There just is no comparison. There were not special markings in the garments that are mentioned in Exodus 28, as Mormons would say, to remind them of the oaths and the covenants that they make in the temple. We don't see anything like that. There is nothing in the Bible that would show that Christians ever had anything like that.
But how many people were impressed? I looked at all the different comments that were on the LDS video page on YouTube, and they were saying, how wonderful, I learned new things, and all the things that they were saying were not very accurate because it was not complete. They did not give a whole lot of information in the 4 minutes. The main thrust of the video, in my opinion, was quit criticizing our garments, because look at all these other religions who are wearing these other kinds of vestments and the habits and all the rest. As you mentioned yesterday's show, I've said this before, that we have not typically covered this. They've now opened this up for criticism when they bring this up and don't give us complete information. So we're here to present the whole picture.
The only time that I can recall that we've ever mentioned or talked in any type of depth about the temple garments is when a Mormon has gone public trying to deny something about them. I recall a while back, we responded to a comment by Joanna Brooks, who's a Mormon blogger. She also made a very similar comment about the magical underwear, and she was incredulous that that kind of a statement was made about the temple garment. And I'm not having a problem with them asking for a bit of respect when it comes to these vestments. The problem is it was up until now, whenever you brought it up, it was considered disrespectful. Just for even mentioning it was considered by many Latter-day Saints as being disrespectful. So it put us kind of between a rock and a hard place on this, is how do we discuss this aspect of Mormonism and try to do it in a gentle and respectful manner when a Mormon is not going to look at any type of discussion of this as being either respectful or gentle? That's a difficulty that we'd have to hurdle. But it's not that we've never talked about it, and it's not that we've never addressed it, because as you mentioned, we've had this article about the garments on our website for years. That's why I think we find it a little bit humorous when you have this one Mormon in the Ogden Standard Examiner talking about the Mormon Church leading the discussion on this. He said, "It is a good time to be open and honest about issues such as this one. I'm glad to see the church take the lead and step out to discuss it." Really? They're taking the lead? They've been lagging for decades on this. They've had opportunities since the internet came out in the 1990s to do something about this, and they've chosen to be silent on it. Only now they've decided to be somewhat transparent. And why? I think it's because of everything else they're having to talk about now. They can't escape it. The internet has made it impossible for them to shield not only their own members from some of this information, but even shield some of the general public as to what Mormons believe on this. So when it comes to being transparent and taking a lead, I think that comment leaves much to be desired. What I wish they would have done in the video is address why such an accusation has been around for so long, but it doesn't. It just says, look, some have called it magical. They're not. We find that offensive. I think they should have asked the question, how could such accusations even come about? And that's what we want to talk about tomorrow, because whenever you talk about this magical element of the garments, I think the one magical element, quote unquote, would be the claim made by the Mormon Church and Mormon leaders in particular, that there is some type of protective element involved in the garment that Mormons wear. And we're going to discuss that tomorrow.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Have you ever wanted to go to Israel but didn't have the right opportunity? Well, now's your chance. As MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson, along with Matt Slick, the founder of CARM.org, are leading a 14-day tour this February. This newly revamped trip will take us to such places as Caesarea, Nazareth, and Masada. In addition, archaeologist and filmmaker Joel Kramer will join the group for 3 days, taking us to such sites as Jericho, Jacob's Well, and Cave 1 in Qumran. There'll be short devotional messages everywhere we go, along with baptisms in the Jordan River and a communion service at the Garden Tomb. The price of this tour includes your international flights, 3- and 4-star hotels, 2 buffet meals a day, all admission fees, and even taxes and tips. You'll come back from this spectacular 14-day tour with a new zeal to read the Bible. The deadline for registration is December 15th. For more information, go to mrm.org and click on the Israel logo to the right side of the page, or write us at contact@mrm.org. We look forward to seeing you in the Holy Land.